My God, the nation is on the wrong track. By all means, enjoy his inauguration. Dance in the aisle. Go dancing in the streets. But I'm going to tell you right now, ain't no way in hell you think we're going to be silent. There's no way in hell you think we going anywhere. You know, I interviewed Harry Belafonte, brother right there. I asked him about why is he still in America. He said, you know what? For all of my love of the French Riviera, he said, I stayed here to make it better. And see, I know y'all really think this is yours. I know y'all really, really think that we should go to where we came from. Well, I'm going to tell you where I came from. Riverside Hospital, Houston, Texas. 250 Defender Street in Clinton Park. And then 222 Pennsylvania Street in Clinton Park. So we're here. And we gonna swing. And I'm telling you right now, y'all act a fool. It's gonna be the Montgomery Brawl.
Yes, sir.
Because see, we gonna throw the cap in the air.
That signal.
And when it's time to swing, it's time to swing.
Yes, sir.
And so y'all can play it cute. Oh, by the way, all of you working class people, oh, I can't wait till the corporations start laying your asses off. I can't wait, because Elon's already said that we need to destroy the economy.
That's right.
To reconstruct it.
Yep, that's right.
And see, all y'all who supports this, I'm sure Dana White is going to slap his wife around some more.
How about that?
And Trump is going to elevate him. And I know Jenny Thomas is just pleased tonight.
Yes, indeed.
And I know Clarence is saying, oh, Miss Jenny.
Ooh, God. Oh, I can't see.
We can now retire with millions because Trump is going to replace me with somebody hard right. Well, to the people out there who are frustrated and angry, and I've been seeing your text messages and your Twitter posts and all that, all I tell you to do is go pick up a history book.
Come on.
And do understand.
Come on.
That post-slavery, America allowed the slave owners to get their plantations back.
Yeah, they did.
As long as they pledged to abide by the Constitution. So the very folk we were fighting came back and got their riches. And the slaves didn't come back. But they did keep slavery in the Constitution and allowed the penal system to go forward. See, that's why the California deal is so important, because they don't mind that prison labor in California.
That's right.
So y'all can enjoy your win, but I'm telling you right now, a lot of you who voted for Trump and you're rejoicing right now, there will be tears. And when the tears come shedding, you can't cry on our shoulders. And you can't come to say, I don't know how this happened. And all we gonna say is, we tried to tell you.
Next up, we have some perspectives with Renee. One, she's talking with Stacey Abrams, and another one is a segment from her viewpoints.
Votes one by one thrown out. We successfully got that rule about hand counting votes one by one thrown out.
Yep.
Praise God. Are we in the clear, or should we expect any more funny business?
So we are done with the past bad action of the SEB, the State Election Board.
Okay.
But we still have a governor and a secretary of state who do not believe in free and fair elections.
Okay.
And we know that because the incredible turnout rate that we are seeing, the lines we are seeing, that's the direct result of Republicans making it harder to vote by mail.
Okay.
Because as Brian Kemp said, he didn't like it. He didn't like the result.
Mm.
So it's not that we have more people who have just suddenly decided, yay, I want to vote in person. Mm-hmm. They've been precluded from using another method. So mm-hmm. they are changing lanes. Voter suppression doesn't have one example. They have multiple. Can you register and stay on the rolls? Can you cast a ballot? Can that ballot be counted?
I think because of how trivialized Donald Trump's sentiments have been, people, because of his personality, feel like they can relate with him and they see him as harmless. If anything, they can attest to Donald Trump maybe being a liar and maybe even a brat in some instances. But he's actually dangerous. Can you talk about some of the ways he's actually dangerous to American citizens?
When we think of authoritarian regimes, places that used to be democracies that are now dictatorships, the way they get started is that they seem harmless. Mm-hmm. They are brash. They sound different. They seem to be plain spoken. They tell it like it is. And that's how they get you. Because what happens next is that they convince you that people you disagree with are your enemies, that the press is lying to you, and that they know the only truth. Mm. The problem is we get so comfortable being in a democracy, we don't think anything else can happen. He may seem harmless, but that's part of the shtick. In fact, he has been the architect of stripping women of their rights, but we are the first generation to lose rights in our lifetime since Reconstruction.
That's big. That's crazy.
Because the last time they did it, we got Jim Crow. Mm-hmm. So let's remember what happens when you lose civil rights.
Hey, y'all, what's up? It's Friday, so I'm going to keep it black.
But I'm going to keep it free!
Next up, we have Chris Matthews with his viewpoint from MSNBC.
Let's pick up on that. What are the changes that we see coming in foreign policy? I mean, we've always noted that in Donald Trump's first term, he was, John is at the Lemire press conference in Helsinki, where he gets him to say that he trusts Putin more than his own intel people. There was what he said, but then there was a tough Republican Senate that would hit Russia with one sanction after another sanction after another sanction. So a lot of pro-Putin talk. But the actual legislation and the action toward Russia, tougher.
Yeah.
What do we expect this time?
I think Congress has changed since then, right? I think at that point, the Republicans in Congress, led by Mitch McConnell, felt that Trump was kind of a not particularly legitimate leader on foreign policy and was willing to defy him. Today, you've got a House Republican caucus that voted majority against the latest tranche of Ukraine aid. I think the other thing that's really important here on foreign policy, just right up front, is NATO. He doesn't have to withdraw from there. He tried, thought he wanted to do it several times during his first term, was talked out of it by more establishment Republicans around him. Doesn't matter anymore whether he actually pulls out, because what he has said about Article 5 means that NATO is, in effect, a dead letter. If you do not believe that the United States is going to come to the defense of allies, which he's made very clear is not a given, then it doesn't really mean all that much. And I think so you see all over the world today, people recalculating, recalibrating their expectations. Does China actually worry so much about the United States when it comes to things like Taiwan, when it comes to things like South China Sea? Probably not. Trump never expressed much of an interest in those issues. I think, as Keir said, the world is waking up to a very different place.
And Jonathan, you look at China, and Donald Trump is, at least in the first term, he was focused on finance. He was focused on trade. He was focused on tariffs. He was not focused so much on Taiwan. And so now there really is a big question. Is the United States over the next 4 years going to abandon Ukraine and their fight for their life? And also the Taiwanese? Because the Biden, this will get lost in history for quite some time. But the Biden administration was tough on China. You look at what they did from Australia all the way up to the Philippines, Guam. I mean, they really, really were hemming China in. I suspect he'll probably retreat from that one.
Yeah, Biden was tough on China and bolstered our Pacific partners, and he believed in transatlantic alliances. I mean, NATO not only was strengthened but expanded. The signature foreign policy achievement of the Biden administration is the way he rallied the world to help Kyiv, and all of that is now in danger. To Peter's point, Donald Trump never expressed much interest in Taiwan. He has made it clear that the aid to Ukraine will come to an end. His running mate, the vice president elect J.D. Vance, has done the same. He also, Trump has made it clear to Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, we should note, just yesterday, as Americans are going to the polls, dismissed the one member of his cabinet, Gallant, who was standing up to him, sort of solidifying his control there. And Trump has said to Netanyahu, do what you need to do in terms of the Middle East. So this is a reshaped world, and we are seeing these world leaders rush their congratulations to Trump. I mean, privately, most of them did not get along with him very well in his first term, but now realize that they have to deal with him again, and that includes Zelensky.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is an extremely nervous moment in Kyiv for President Zelensky, who now worries that his support for the United States could collapse. Chris Matthews, you were sitting in your home state of Pennsylvania this morning, a state won by Donald Trump, not as close as some predicted it would be. Kamala Harris didn't do what she needed to do, even in those suburbs of Philadelphia that are so decisive in these elections. What's your morning after assessment of what happened?
Well, several months ago, maybe a year ago, I began to study the 50 counties in the middle, the ones that James Carville calls Alabama in Pennsylvania, between Pittsburgh and Philly. And in every one of those counties, it seems that the Trump vote between 16 and 20 had gone up into the 70s. And now I assumed it was going to continue in that progression. The red states, the red counties were going to get redder and redder. And therefore, he was going to do better in those areas and maybe enough to overcome the suburbs. And he did. He did. And I think that's it. And it's all about immigration and the economy. But immigration has been a terrible decision for Democrats. I don't know who they think they were playing to when they let millions of people come cruising through the border at their own will because of their own decisions. They came running through that border and they didn't do a thing about it. And a lot of people are very angry about that. Working people especially, they feel that they've been betrayed. They feel that their country has been given away and they don't like it. And I don't know who liked it. The Hispanics apparently didn't like it. They want the law enforced. And so I'm not sure they were playing to anything that was smart here in terms of an open border. And that's what it is, an open border. And I think it's a bad decision. I hope they learn from it. The economy, I think you can talk all you want about rates of inflation going down. What people do is they remember what the price of something was, whether it's gas or anything or cream cheese or anything else. And they'll say, I can remember when it was $2, now it's $7. And they remember in the last 5 years. That's how people think. Democrats don't know how people think anymore. They think about their country, and they think about the cost of things, and the working people figure, well, all these college kids, all the ones who went to elite universities, all looking down on us. Besides all this, we're getting condescension and deplorables and all that stuff. And they felt it, and they voted that way. It's for real.
I mean, and the thing is, you talk about the college kids that graduate and go out and try to buy a home, good luck. I mean, even the young voters a couple of weeks ago, Democrats said, I don't know what this means for our future. We are not pulling in the young voters the way we used to pull in the young voters. So it seems to me, Chris, that and you're old enough, like I am, you're old enough to remember this. This seems probably like the low point for the Democratic Party going all the way back to, let's say, 1984. You know, the San Francisco Democrats, Reagan wins 49 states. The party is just in complete chaos. But 2 years later, Jesse Jackson travels around the South. He registers a lot of voters. And Democrats, shock everybody, take back the Senate in 86. I don't know that it's going to be that clean and neat here. But man, there has to be a real reexamination for all the reasons we were talking about. A lot of it having to do with things that progressives don't like to talk about. And that is the political correctness. You know, we were talking about some issues here, and Willie showed me what he had written down on his piece of paper, where he's also talking about the sort of these things that upset working class Democrats that used to always vote Democratic and are now voting Republican.
You know, I think there's an issue here about gender, and I want to get into the issue. Bob Casey was a very popular governor here in Pennsylvania. He said that Pennsylvania is a John Wayne state. It's not a Jane Fonda state. Now, you can read a lot into that, but one of this is kind of the old values, yes, and all that about the male patriarchy, whatever you want to call it, all the negative things. But it's also a toughness. And I think if we're going to get a woman elected president, and we can do this in the generic terms now because it is going to be generic from now on, I think it might have to be a more conservative Democrat. a more conservative Republican. I think like Margaret Thatcher and Merkel and people like that, you want, and maybe Hillary was right. She had to be a little tougher on war issues, because if you're going to run as a woman, you can't be, all three strikes can't be against you. Woman of color, that you're a woman, and that you're weak on defense or weak on spending. You know, the Democrats have got to stop all this spending. I mean, I my wife loves to argue. She's a big Democrat. She says, you know, the economy's in great shape. I said, yeah, because the more government spends money, the more it does, the more it jacks up prices. It just does. Yeah. That's what you do during a recession. You spend more money. If you spend more money, the prices of things go up. And that's a fact. And the Democrats never addressed that. They just went right past the graveyard and said, oh, no, we don't know how this inflation came to be. I don't understand that. Yeah. We don't understand the border. Yes, we do understand the border problem. As a guy said to me, why does the little man love his country? Because it's all he's got. And if you're down in the dumps and you see your country being overrun from people from another country who just decide to come in for economic reasons, you're going to get mad about that. You say, right. Wait a minute, the only thing I got is my country. Yeah. Well, that's all I got.
And you live in Philly or you live in Washington, D.C., and you've got police forces that can't keep cops on the force right now. And over the past three, four That's years, true. Crime has been everywhere in those cities. That also has an impact. You know, it's so interesting what he said about Bob Casey saying,
yeah,
about your John Wayne. Mm-hmm. It's a John Wayne state. Mm-hmm. I know you've heard me tell this story before, but mm-hmm. 30 years ago in 1994, my first day knocking on doors, mm-hmm. I knocked on like, you know, 50 doors. I came home. My parents said, how was it, Joey? So, well, I learned that you're either on the side of John Wayne or you're on the side of Jane Fonda. I said that to him. I said, it is that split. And you see it the second you knock on the door. And I will tell you, that was 30 years ago. And that is still the cultural rift that pulls at Americans.
Understood. And you have to, within that, figure out how to win. And I think there's a lot of very legitimate discussion here about how Democrats lost this.
Yep.
But I just got a text from a member of Congress saying, you know, something else we need to look at is how people are turning to social media, podcasts, and other non-traditional sources for their news, and also news stations that aren't news. And I canvassed in all of the battlegrounds. I was shocked by the amount of misinformation voters were truly repeating back to me. Truly shocked. I do believe this is what caused the collapse of the Democrats nationwide. You cannot win when people believe lies.
But I mean,
I think that's fair, too.
You know, and Willie, we talk about it all the time. We talk to our friends who are lawyers, who are money people on Wall Street. And they just give you misinformation. You're like, dude, where
smart.
Did you get that from?
Well, that's educated.
And then you sit there and you talk them through it. And then they're like, are you sure? Did he really say that about Millie?
Yeah.
Oh, he didn't say that about Jane. You're making that up.
Yeah.
And then you sit there and you say, oh, here, chapter and verse. And then it's Willie didn't mean it.
That's where it always is. He's not going to put a 200% tariff. Come on, why are you guys biting on all the bait he throws out there? Well, we watched him as president for 4 years, and we take him at his word. Elise, we'll give you the final word here in this segment about lessons learned for Democrats and now what the next 4 years look like.
The progressive era should be over if they want to start winning again.
Wow. There's that.
Peter Baker.
Peter, final thoughts this morning.
Top well, that.
I think what we've learned is that Trump is not the aberration anymore. In fact, this is Trump's America, right? I think for a long time, a lot of Americans, a lot of liberals and Republicans who didn't like Trump told themselves he was a historical anomaly, that he didn't win really in 2016. People weren't with him. He didn't win in 2020, no matter what he says, and that he will eventually be purged. Well, that's not the case. We're going to have a 12-year at least era of Trump, and that's a pretty significant era.
Finally, we find out that the Vice President Harris did concede the election to Donald Trump. This is from Face to the Nation. And thanks for listening today.
We are expecting Vice President Harris to speak at 4 p.m. this afternoon at Howard University, but we've recently learned that Harris has officially conceded this race to Trump. She did speak on the phone with him, called him to congratulate him for winning this general presidential election for 2024. And according to a senior Harris aide, Harris also discussed the peaceful transfer of power and the importance of being a president for all Americans. This is based off of what we're hearing from the campaign. And in terms of what we're expecting to tonight or later this afternoon, Harris will be conceding this race, and she will be addressing her supporters at her alma mater. This was a very important place for Harris. This is symbolizes a place where she can officially come home. Of course, last night, this was the plan that Harris was initially scheduled to speak here. But of course, given the results, that no longer happened.
Nidia, obviously, the Harris campaign, the Democrats have a lot of soul searching right now about what didn't work for them during this election. We also heard that the vice president has reached out to Trump, congratulating him. Do we know anything more about any of the conversations that are taking place behind closed doors?
The campaign has been pretty quiet as of last night when there wasn't necessarily a positive outlook for them. But CBS News has obtained a letter from the campaign chair, Jen O'Malley Dillon, that she sent to her campaign staff. And in it, she addresses that the country moved to the right, but the least amount of movement to the right was seen in battleground states. And this was because of the work that the staff put in. She congratulates her staff for putting together what was a historical race in 90 days, mobilizing a lot of voters. And she says that the work here for them is only beginning to address the impacts of what a Trump presidency is going to bring to American voters. And this is the latest that we're hearing from the campaign. And of course, we expect as days progress to learn more about what was going on behind the scenes, their take on the situation. But it's also important to recognize that the people working behind the scenes and with Harris's campaign, a lot of this is very, very personal to them. They've dedicated months, if not years, to building an infrastructure, to building a ground operation that was very extensive and large. We saw that many of, you know, staffers from the campaign side, official side on Vice President Harris, they were out knocking doors themselves, trying to mobilize every single vote because they were well aware that this was going to come down to the margin of errors. And though they were not necessarily oblivious to the fact that this was going to be a very difficult and tight race, this is still personal for a lot of the campaign staffers involved in this.
It always is. Nidia Cavazos, thank you.
Welcome to the Jazz Corner here on WRCT Pittsburgh.
I was a stranger in the city. Out of town with the people I knew. I had a feeling of self-pity. What to do, what to do, what to do. The outlook was decidedly blue. But as I walked through the foggy streets alone, it turned out to be the luckiest day I've known. Town had me low and it had me down. I viewed the morning with alarm. The British Museum had lost all its charm. How long I wondered could this thing last? But the age of miracles had not passed. For suddenly I saw you standing there, and in foggy London town the sun was shining everywhere. Let down, let it. Do you do it? 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 Do you do it looking at me. Nothing but blue skies do I see. Bluebirds singing a song. Nothing but bluebirds all the day long. I never saw the sun shining so bright. Never saw things going so right. Noticing the days hurrying by. When you're in love, my, how they fly. Blue days, all of them gone, gone, gone. Nothing but blue sky from now. Oh, 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 oh.
Tell the truth. Present and alone, without phones, just be. Intertwine the intellects of minds and deep conversations begin to heal and reveal what is needed to nurture and grow. Commence the soothing of wounds hearts choose before the taking off of shoes and clothes. And naked molecules from liquid vestibules, vibrations recall spirit. Water from within to purge, and then a manifesto begins. Thoughts of harmony and balance, visions of power and love, feelings of appreciation. Moments of elevation. A slight brush of the hand and a subtle excitement of the brow. Above those dark, gazing eyes, where two left brains negotiate logistics with two rights. And on this night, she said to herself, he could be perfect. And he asked to call, saying, I'd love to get to know you. Let me show you, love. I need you to know that I be slow as molasses. And then they both started laughing.
Take
Yeah, Mr. Oscar Peterson there for you, taking you to a concert from 1994 in Munich, Germany. And Munich's name of the recording is called City Lights, the Oscar Peterson Quartet Live from Munich, 1994. It's on Two Lines, Mac Avenue Records. Tune we heard was City Lights. Also, music from Jasmine Horn, new music from her. Some great stuff, long awaited. Also, Jasmine Horn with the WDR Big Band doing a social call. And my good friend Eugenie Jones, a live performance from KUVO. And she did a Eugenie-ized version of Blue Skies. Sound good, Eugenie? Sounding good as usual. Yes, you're listening to the Jazz Corner here in WRCT. Kevin Amos in with you on a Sunday.
Thank you.